Welcome to The Friendly Unknown. I'm your host, Allison Felice. Join me as I talk to creative professionals from around the globe about their paths to becoming who they are today in order to help demystify the creative journey. Today, I'm really excited to bring you my chat with Melbourne-based creative Becky Orpin. Becky's one of my favorite creatives. Her work is so positive and always makes me smile. Everything she touches turns to cute, it seems. Her creativity takes many forms, some of which are illustration, design, children's books, murals, branding, crafts, clothing, painting, puzzles, packaging, and more. My baby Felix loves her children's books. They're super adorable. Becky was such a joy to talk to, so generous and humble for someone who has such an incredible career spanning 24 years. In our chat, we look back on her career, where it started, where it is today, and what she's learned about herself along the way. She offers great advice and inspiration for how to build and navigate a creative career. And stay tuned to the end of the episode, where she answers a couple questions I received from listeners. To find out more about Becky, you can follow her on Instagram at Becky Orpin or on BeckyOrpin.com. That's BECIORPIN. To stay up to date on all things The Friendly Unknown, follow me on Instagram at Allison Felice or visit thefriendlyunknown.com. Without further delay, here's my chat with Becky. Becky, thanks so much for being here today. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I'm super excited to have you on. You're one of my favorite creatives.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
I feel like what you create is like an antidote to everything that's like going on in the world right now.
I hope to sometimes, you know, spread some positivity.
Definitely.
It's definitely it's a tricky time for sure.
I feel like your work is really positive, optimistic, and generous, and that just like brings me joy when I see it. So
thank you. Yeah, that's very nice.
Well, could you talk a little bit about who you are and what you're up to at the moment?
I never quite know how to describe what I do because I kind of do lots of different things. But I guess predominantly my work at the moment is made up of illustration, digital illustration. I've worked in lots of different areas, and I also have written some craft books. So I've done a lot of DIY work. I don't know. I've been running my studio for like 24 years. Long time.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Is that vague enough for you? Yeah.
that's kind of like getting at just one of the things I'm so excited to talk to you about, which is your career. It's just so inspiring to me, especially now that I'm a new mom.
Yes.
Just like seeing what, you know, what you've done, you know, while having kids is so inspiring to me. That's and sweet. I'm excited to be able to like pick your brain.
Yes.
Today.
Do it. Go for it.
Yeah. I just want to sort of like jump off from there. Like you work across so many different mediums, from making books to murals, illustrations, branding, painting, crafts, puzzles. Like,
yes.
It's pretty incredible. How do you do so much? I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but like, how are you so productive?
I just get bored really easily. I really like to jump across mediums because I feel like that kind of perpetuates my work. I guess I'm quite curious about, you know, could I do this? I do a lot of personal projects, and I guess those personal projects I use to explore different mediums that, you know, I haven't used before, but I think, you know, my work could sort of go into that space. So, I think that's, you know, busyness for me is what makes me productive. So I've definitely, you know, here in Melbourne, we've had two lockdowns, I guess, and we're in the middle of, or not even the middle, like a week and a half into the second one. And the first one was 4 weeks, and I was really busy then, hugely busy, and then this second one that we're in now, I'm sort of just normally busy, and I'm just finding it so hard to get anything done. So I definitely find, I know my work pattern, and my work pattern is that if I'm busy and working across a whole lot of different projects, in different meetings and stuff, and that's how I produce my best work. And I guess that's, it's sort of self-initiated that I do so many different mediums.
I was going to ask you about personal projects and how much of your work is personal projects, because I really believe that personal projects bring in more work, and then it also allows you to like keep evolving your craft and like your ideas. And
I absolutely agree. I think personal projects are really important, and I've always I've had a few different personal projects. Some of them have gotten completely out of control. I ran a clothing line for 10 years, and I would say that was one giant personal project. I've always done, exhibited my work and sort of things like that. As I said before, it does give you the opportunity to work in these different mediums. And I think that really pushes your work. For me, it's always pushed my work forward. And I've always found that when, clients, I make that work with no commercial context. Like, I don't make that work be like, I'm going to sell this many prints, or I'm going to, that work is always just for me. Like, I make sure it doesn't have a commercial context. But then what happens usually is that, a client will see that later on down the track, and they'll be like, oh, I really like that work. And I think that then opens more opportunities for you. It kind of broadens your folio and shows different aspects to your work that you wouldn't necessarily get to show in, if you're just doing commercial work. So yeah, I think it's really important.
Yeah, definitely. Because I do think that people hire you for work you've already made.
Correct.
It's like they see it, and it's really easy for them to understand what you can make. And
yeah, especially in a commercial context, I think that's, the commercial client wants to, they generally want some security that you're going to be able to carry out that work. So they need to see something pre-existing to sort of jump off, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's a great tip for people who are kind of starting out in their career and maybe aren't getting the type of work they want. Or
yes, definitely. I've seen that before, to say, to make the work that you want to make.
Yeah.
Yeah, if that makes sense. I think it's really important. It's also really fun. It's like so fun to make work without a brief. I definitely, for my personal work, like, you have to carve out the time to do that. Like, if I have an exhibition, like, I can't be like, I never am able to be like, cool, I'm just going to put a month aside to work on this. Like, I have to be like, no, I have to do this on the weekends and after hours. My commercial work still needs to keep going. For me, mm-hmm. It does anyway. Not everybody works that way, but for me, my commercial work does need to keep going, because I still need to make money, and because I don't necessarily plan on making money from the non-commercial projects, from my own personal work. So it is really hard often to carve out the time to do it. But for me, I've always found that sacrifice is so much worth it, like having this extra it's really satisfying too. And to create something when you're creating for a client, not necessarily, you don't get to do exactly what you want all the time, whereas when you're working your personal work, it's just how you want to do it. There's actually only been one time especially with exhibitions where I had a gallery that was involved. Like, they came and did studio visits and, they're like, oh, I think it would be like that. And I see that as my least successful show, because they had so much input that it actually changed my work. And I made it because they were quite a commercial gallery. And so I made all this work for them with, them saying, oh, this sells really well and this sells really well. And it totally clouded my vision. And then I ended up not hating the work, but it just wasn't, true to the type of work that I really wanted to make for myself,
Yeah. So do you feel like you are usually exploring the new mediums through personal work, or do you ever get asked from someone to just sort of go completely into a new area you haven't done before?
Definitely. I do a lot of work for this magazine called Lunch Lady, which is like a kids, a beautiful kids magazine quarterly, which is, best around food and parenting and stuff. And so they, every month they come to me, every issue, they'll be like, do you think you could, like, you know, one time they're like, do you think you could do pie tops? And so then I got to like illustrate, you know, do illustrations, but out of pastry. So like they do stuff like, they're always like, what do you think you could? So that's, I love that too. I love it when it, you know, but I've got such a close relationship with them that, that they can kind of throw things at me and I kind of can usually work it out, which, you know, in a way that's kind of personal work too. But, yeah, generally I haven't – yeah, I think generally most of my work – oh, no, I've definitely – like there was a few years ago a quite a big, you know, shopping center here, gave me a whole lot of money and said, we want you to come up with a children's holiday program and it's totally up to you. So they're like, but we want a structure designed and we want this and this and this. But it was, the whole thing was completely up to me. Like, wow. Yeah, so that was amazing. that was really, you know, for me, that was true creative direction where they, you know, I got to design a structure and work with one of my favorite architects to design the structure. I got to, you know, employ all these great craft teachers and I got to buy the best quality materials. So that was kind of, it was almost events, you know, or something rather than, yeah. So definitely that was really amazing because they really trusted me. And so yeah, this definitely has been times. I guess it's really hard when I think of my commercial work because the first thing I think of is commercial illustration because that's predominantly what it is. But I have had a lot of opportunities where people have kind of trusted in me to do things in other mediums, I guess. Yeah.
And when you get a project like that, is that like, scary for you or is that exciting for you?
It's terrifying.
Like, how do you get, because I think if someone came to me for that, it would just be like so flattering but also so overwhelming at the same time. I have so much fear. Like where do you start? But like how do you start? Because I remember seeing your posts about that. It was beautiful and the crafts you did were beautiful. And
thank you.
Like how do you pull that off?
Yeah.
And how do you get like past the fear?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like it is really scary, actually. I think it's like, and I often do spend like sleepless nights. And I guess it was the same with making my craft books too. Like I had never made a book before that. And there was these huge productions of, you know, of a whole lot of different things that I had to learn. Like I had to learn how to make a DIY project. I'd never done that before. I had to learn how to write. So I have faith that people who have approached me think that I know what I'm doing. So then I just kind of blindly pretend I know what I'm doing.
And fake it till you make it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could do this. And then you just kind of like step by step, just like, especially when it's a really big project, like a book or like the, you know, holiday program, you just kind of break it down into smaller pieces and then just kind of slowly achieve those smaller pieces. And then, yeah. And a lot of organization, I guess, is the key. A lot of planning and, I like to have all bases covered, I guess. Like I'm so visual, like everything starts with, like still starts on Illustrator because that's something that I'm so familiar with, like making mood boards or, you know, I don't know, color palettes or something. So that's kind of how I start because that's easy. And then just from there, it's just like, I guess, a learning process. But, yeah, it's terrifying and I've definitely been terrified many times, but you just kind of got to move past it. And then hopefully at the end you're rewarded with this whole new skill set of things that you can do or a project that you've been able to pull off successfully. And generally it's been pretty successful. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It must be like a really amazing feeling to kind of grow and expand through your work.
Yeah.
And I imagine after sort of like doing this over and over again, like doing a book and then doing this workshop, like after a while, you just know that you can pull it off. Like it might be.
Yes, totally. Definitely. Yeah. You become more confident in it. Yeah, for sure. But still, you know, if I teach a workshop and I haven't taught one for a while, then I still get nervous. Like even if it's just for like my local library or something, you know, you still kind of. But I think that you have those emotions. There's a reason as a human being why you have those emotions. And for me, it's like it pushes me forward, you know, like that sort of I guess it's the endorphins or the, you know, that actually that nervousness is often there to kind of help you. So
yeah. Like follow the fear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of like what this podcast is about. Just sort of how do you move into the unknown? How do you know it's going to be okay?
Yeah, well, you don't. I guess you don't. And I guess, yeah, like I said before, you if I have these clients who have faith in me, and they must have faith in me for a reason. So, and definitely as I get older and have more experience, there's some parts of me which is less scared and more confident. And that's just experience, I think, in lots of different things. But yeah, it's just blindly going forth.
I think at a certain point you just have to go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty amazing to know that you still have the fear in you.
I think it's really important. I think it would be bad if you didn't have fear anymore. I think that, you know, complacency is equivalent to laziness to me. So, you know, I really hope I don't ever want to rest on my laurels. I definitely would like to rest a bit more, but I hope I could still keep pushing forward. Yeah. For a while yet.
For sure. Mm. I want to go back to the beginning.
Oh, yes.
So you said 24 years you've been doing this.
Yeah.
How did you start? Like, you started in apparel, right? And how did that evolve?
Actually, I started in textile design, it's more like, I guess, surface design. Mm. I actually did start fashion design, but then I didn't like it and I dropped out. So then I just kind of messed around for a few years, and then I found textile design, which was actually such a brilliant course for me, because I was interested in design, and there was no illustration course that you could do back then. So textile design was great because it had a lot of drawing in the actual course. Like, you did two whole days of drawing, which was incredible. But then it also taught you design skills. And I actually really loved pattern design, which I didn't realize that I did before that. So it was this really great course, and it also had a really big hands-on content. So you did screen printing, you did knitting, you did weaving, and all that stuff to me is actually really, really important as well. And I didn't realize until I finished, like, how important those three factors. So there was like the design, it had the drawing, and then it had this hands-on kind of practical application, which was really those three things together is exactly what, you know, I still do today. So that was really important. So I guess, and that was the first thing that I'd ever found. Like, I wasn't a great student when I was at high school, and I wasn't, you know, I just was kind of average, but I knew I could draw really well. So when I found this course, it was the first thing that I found in my life that I was actually really good at. And I actually really dedicated myself to this course, like, very much so. And
it's amazing to find that.
Yeah, it was. It was really amazing. You know, I was a bit, I guess, a bit older, like I was 20 then, or, you know, it wasn't straight after school, which I think was really important for me too. Like, I needed to have a few years of finishing high school to kind of party and do a bunch of stuff, you know. So once I finished that, and I guess that course it was very much very much designed at that time for interiors, like, so designing for like bed linen and stuff. And I was very much interested in fashion. And so I had really great lecturers who kind of supported me in this fashion thing. And then I knew when I finished that I didn't want to necessarily go in. So I guess the traditional path for doing textile design is you produce a folio and then you go on and work for a studio, like, you know, a bed linen company, or, you know, a buyer in a department store or something like that. And I kind of knew that I had actually won competitions within my school years. So I went and worked within commercial design studios as part of, so I had a little bit of experience doing that, and I was like, oh, it was really nice, but it's not exactly what I wanted to do. So I didn't really have any idea of what I wanted to do when I left, when I graduated. And and then literally on my graduate show, like, I got offered my first freelance job And so, yeah, then I just sort of started doing freelance for local fashion kind of companies. And, yeah, it just kind of, you know, I wouldn't say it snowballed because this was like pre-internet. Like people didn't have websites or Instagram or, you know, things happened a lot slower then. And I'm really actually appreciative for that. So when I finished and I started doing a bit of freelance work, but then I was also like working in a bookshop and I worked in a nightclub. I ran a Saturday nights at a club and I, you know, I had a whole lot of things going on. I was volunteering at galleries. Freelance work was just one part of my life then. And I guess the aim was to make it the full-time part of my life, but I didn't have a plan. I wasn't very good at plans. Everything that's happened has been very organic for me. I'm not very good at making long-term plans. I think perhaps I do think about it and all my actions are move towards this long-term plan, but I'm not like a five-year goal kind of person. So everything I was doing, and I guess what happened is, you know, all the jobs that I was working in a bookshop on the weekends. I was screen printing for this really amazing textile company, so hands-on screen printing 2 days a week. I was running the club night, and what happened is all those kind of extra jobs kind of helped me get towards my goal of running my freelance work. And, you know, in that the company that I was screen printing for, they gave me a key and said, you know, you can kind of use our facilities when you want. So I was able to like screen print my own t-shirts and sort of send them out to people. And the bookshop was a really great bookshop and provided heaps of great inspiration for me. And the club night, I just met so many people who became clients or became collaborators or who I shared a studio with, you know. So even though they were all kind of these separate things, it all was working, it all helped to work towards one goal. And then I guess it took me about 5 years before I actually just lived off my freelance. But I had such a great time. Like that was such a, I would definitely put, you know, those years as like the best time of my life. But it was absolutely manic and I was working so much. I would wake up every day and sort of be like, okay, what job am I working today? And have to like go through my mind of like, am I screen printing today? I'm in the bookshop, like, you know. And I would work so much. I would often work on the door on Friday nights. So I worked at the bookshop on Friday nights till 9, and then I'd go from the bookshop to the club and work from 9 till 4 a.m. and then start at the bookshop at 10 a.m. on the Saturday, then 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the bookshop, and then I'd start again at the club at 9 p.m. and then work till 5 a.m. And then, I know, it was so crazy. And then when I was, if it was really busy like Christmas time, then I'd work again at the bookshop on Sundays. So, you know, I just had this insane energy of you do have when you're in your young 20s and was just able to do that.
Still have this energy.
Like, yeah, I mean, I do to a lesser extent. I definitely do. I definitely could not do that anymore. But yeah, I love being busy. And it's funny, and going back, sorry, I'm going to keep referencing our current situation because I feel like it's really kind of shown me so many things about my personality. But, you know, actually what happened recently is, so one of my kids is remote schooling, and because one of my oldest kid, he is in his final years of high school, so all of final years of high school are allowed to be at school. But there was actually a case at his school, so the school got shut down. And so so we're all at home, and because of the case at his school, we've been all trying to self-isolate, even though it's very low risk and he's got tested and blah, 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 blah. But yesterday I went out and I'd been having so much trouble getting work done, but it was like I had to do this, you know, photo shoot, but it was all socially distanced and everything. But I had to do a series of things yesterday, and I got home and I was super inspired. And I'm like, oh, that's what I actually need. I actually need all the, you know, if I'm just at home at home all the time in front of my computer, you know, that's not how I get my work done. I get my work done by having a series of things that I need to do, and some of them are inside of the studio and some of them are made by hand and some of them are made, you know, and that's where I get my energy from. And again, that comes back to what, you know, we're talking about before is why I work across all these different mediums. So I think that energy does come from, yeah, I do still have it, but it requires things to be fed that makes sense. Yeah.
No, that makes total sense. It's been really difficult because, yeah, I'm in San Francisco and we're,
yes,
we haven't come out of lockdown. So it's been 4 months.
Oh, and, my God. That's just so crazy. With the young baby, too. I couldn't with the even baby. Imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, on one hand, I'm so privileged and so thankful to be here with the family. But it is hard. It's I noticed at the beginning I was a lot more anxious, and so I just wasn't really going outside at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a huge toll on my mental health and,
absolutely,
and inspiration. I just felt so blah.
I know.
Just like going for a walk once a day and going
looking at the same things.
It's so helpful.
It's so I find it – well, usually – so my studio is really – so I share a studio. My husband has a hospitality business, like quite a – he has 2 restaurants and 6 food trucks. And so he has a big warehouse, which is really close to our house. And so that's where my studio is. And, you know, I haven't – usually one of us goes to the office. But because of this situation with my son's school, like we've all 4 of us have been home, and that hasn't really happened before. So that's definitely – we're just like, wow, going crazy. And definitely I can go to my studio and still, you know, social distance, and that's really easy. But I haven't even been doing that. So I definitely find that just being at home has been – what about – have you got your studio at home? Is that?
Yeah. So before Felix was born, I had like an office, and now that's our bedroom. So
yes.
So I'm like in a corner.
Yeah.
Desk, oh, man.
I
share with my husband because he works from home. So.
Right. Well, I did. When my first son was born, I worked from home until my youngest son started to go to school. So that was like a good, like 9 years that I work from home. That was the only way I could do it, having kids, you know?
Yeah, because I imagine you don't have much of a clear border between your work and your life.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, same here. It just all kind of melts together.
But that's, I think I've worked out that's fine. I'm good with that. I like that. My kids know what I do. They're really, they're kind of like, I don't know. I think I really love that actually. Sometimes, most of the time, I love it.
Yeah, I love it too because I love my work. I feel like my work is sort of my purpose.
I have said that many times. Yeah. My work is my life.
Yeah. And so like I'm trying to trace back where this is coming from. Like when you were a kid, were you creative? Do you grow up in a creative environment?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I had this quite of alternative upbringing where my parents – I kind of grew up in a commune for part of my life. But it wasn't like a, you know, it was like an inner city commune. I guess my mum was really politically motivated and my parents got divorced. And so I'd see my dad on the weekends. And then when I was quite young, they got, they split up. And then, so I'd see my dad on the weekends and then I lived in this commune with my mum, but it wasn't like a religious or anything like that. It was just kind of, it was really politically motivated, I guess, the commune. So it was just kind of about, I guess, you know, sharing meals and having this big household that all kind of contributed. And, you know, we went to a lot of demonstrations together and went to other communes for holidays and stuff. And so that, and but it was in this really, it was this weird situation where it was in this really quite blue chip real estate area with lots of like, a really expensive area. And it was this beautiful old kind of Edwardian mansion that used to be a an orphanage. So it was huge. But so I was sent just like to the local primary school, but that was like full of kids whose parents were like quite right wing and me being like, and my parents were sending me to school in like anti-uranium mining t-shirts and stuff. So I was kind of like, I knew from a young age that I was quite different and that from, I guess, a lot of the kids in my area. And I still had friends and stuff, but I guess I knew I was from a young age, I learned that it was okay to be different, you know. And my mum was quite strict on, you know, we didn't really watch much TV and we read a lot of books and played outside a lot. And I guess I was just definitely used to forced to use my imagination quite a lot. So, my dad is a carpenter and my mum, as I said, she's always been kind of worked in sort of women's services and stuff. So not necessarily creative but definitely brought up to be a creative thinker, I would say. So yeah, I think that's where it came from. But I always loved drawing. For as long as I can remember, I loved drawing is what I loved to do. Yeah. And so that's definitely what I always knew that I wanted to draw as part of my living, but I didn't know what that would entail. So yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was a cool way to grow up.
Yeah, so unique. And I think learning that lesson early on that it's okay to be different is so amazing. I feel like I tried to fit in for so long and I'm just learning.
I definitely went through that too. Definitely when I was a teenager, you know, I had these crazy parents who grew weed and who, you know, did all this stuff. And I was like, oh, no way. I want you to send me to the most conservative school I can find. And I want you to, you know, I want to wear a uniform and I want to have really straight friends. And I went through all of that too. Yeah, that was my rebellion, was having, you know, not wanting to smoke weed and wanting to be sent to a really conservative school. And, you know, that was kind of my later years of high school. But then, of course, once I left high school, I kind of, and you know, did go to university and stuff. I was like, oh, this is actually where I belong. no wonder it was so hard fitting in there. So, yeah, but it was cool. The commune was cool too, because I always say, this is another realization I've had lately, is that one of the reasons I think I'm quite good at my job is because if you do what we do as an illustrator, you're essentially trying to communicate things. So essentially you kind of need to understand humanity to be able to communicate different things to different people. And I think living in the commune, like, it was a pretty wild place in the sort of late 70s. Like, you know, there was a lesbian couple that lived there. There was a guy with schizophrenia that lived there. And that this commune was just accepting, you know, there was people of all different, you know, cultural backgrounds that kind of came in and out. And that just, you know, to me, that was normal. But, it, you know, I guess back then it wasn't, in this very white, very kind of, you know, well-to-do suburb. But I guess what that gave me is this really great understanding of humanity from a young age. And I think that really has helped me in my work. Sorry, that's very deep, I know. But
no, it's something, I love deep.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've realized lately. I had my sister's husband, who unfortunately recently died, but he was one of the best conversationalists I ever met. And he said to me once, "Why do you think you're so good at your job?" And that was the answer that came out. And I was like, "Oh my God, that's what it is." You know, actually understanding, having a good understanding of what people want and the different types of people there are in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually really get that sense from you. Like, I feel like when I see you, like, I just see how generous you are and, like, how open you are. And it seems like you always have a lot of people around you and you have a huge community. And I think that's super beautiful, because I sort of am so shy. Like, that's sort of like what I aspire to have at some point.
Melbourne is very much like that though, like, as well. Like, it is really easy. I am very sociable, and I definitely say that a lot of my inspiration comes from the people I, you know, have as friends. And I am really, I guess Melbourne's got that, you know, which I think San Francisco probably does too. I've only been there a few times, but, you know, it's not a huge city. Like, it's big enough to have a lot going on, but small enough that you can know, like, have like a really good kind of tribe, I guess.
Yeah. And you see people at the store that you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or, you know, everyone lives within the next sort of three suburbs. But it's, yeah, definitely, there's definitely a good sense of community. If, like, you know, you can put on an exhibition and lots of people will come, or you can put on this market and lots of people will come. So I think definitely there's part of that is Melbourne. And I am very social, and definitely a lot of my inspiration and energy comes from the people who are around me doing really cool things. So, and I'm definitely, it kind of drives my partner crazy. Like, if I could have the commune again, I would totally have it, you know. Like, I would just have this giant house with, you know, if I could have lots of people living in it. And, you know, we always have people over for dinner, or not at the moment because we're not allowed, but when we do, we definitely always have people over, and that stuff is really important to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And how has that helped your career? Just like, do you feel like the connections you have led to a lot of opportunities?
I think so. I mean, you know, when, you know, I was talking about that kind of time when I finished university a while ago, you know, that I was doing all those things, like I was working in the club and working in the bookshop. And, you know, I guess if I look back on it now, that's like, it was like some kind of form of organic networking, which I absolutely despise the idea of networking. But yeah, I guess if you meet like-minded people and you're involved in things that you will find like-minded people, then of course that's going to help your work. Yeah, of course it is. But I guess I would never say that's, you know, I just like having lots of friends who do lots of things. So I guess it, you know, it's definitely helped my work along the way, but that wouldn't be my primary. I guess it's helped my work as far as more as inspiration. If I have people around me doing, you know, making work and doing, being really good at what they do, and that may be creative or it may not be creative, then that's really inspiring to me, and that helps my work, you know, incidentally, I guess, not necessarily like, here's this opportunity you have with a client that's come from a job, you know, that's come from a friend. It's like, it's more like incidental. Yeah.
Or like seeing what's possible maybe, and being around other people who are driven and,
yes,
and
motivated,
doing interesting, fun things.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's definitely part of it. That really inspires me. My husband too, Ralph, like he's constantly doing great. Like he's even, if you think I'm motivated, like he's 100 times more motivated than me.
It's hard to believe.
No, he's like mental. Like if I was on his level, it would be hyper.
So I just saw that he's doing a video.
He's done a show. Yeah. YouTube show, which is going to be so fun. And so that's a great example of our lives, I guess, because they're all our friends who are on that show. And, you know, they're all kind of these inspiring people as well, who are kind of in various areas, like because he's in food. So there's a few different food people and a few of our mutual friends who are artists and stuff. And yeah, it's pretty fun. That show's going to be great.
So you started out in textiles, and then how did that sort of like work its way into design and illustration?
Yeah. So I guess my first freelance jobs were based on, like, if you look at the time then, I guess it was kind of like the late 90s. And I was, as I said, I was interested in fashion when I left. And so I guess that kind of streetwear was just kind of starting to really take off then. Labels like, I guess, Supreme and, you know, X Large and sort of labels like that were just kind of starting, not in Australia. So that's kind of a lot of what I was doing here was making T-shirt graphics for, there's a company here called Factory X, and they owned a few different labels. And one of my good friends, Shauna, who actually studied fashion at the same time I studied textiles, and we became friends because they were same department, textiles and fashion. And she got a job as a female, as a women's wear designer, and she said, she was actually assigned a graphic designer, and she actually said, I don't want to work with them. I want to work with you. And so she fired him, but he later became her husband, which is hilarious. So she said, so I started doing graphics for this label called Revival. And because this company owned multiple clothing labels, like once I started doing T-shirt graphics for her, then somebody else saw it for another label within that sort of company, and then I started doing graphics for them. And then, so then, you know, and then there was another company here called Globe, or was called Hardcore actually. And I guess they were the big like skate distributor here of international labels. And so then they were starting their own in-house label, and so then I started doing graphics for their in-house label. So it was all pretty much, a lot of my work was doing T-shirt graphics for girls. And I guess this was at this time where streetwear was just kind of starting to explode. Like it'd been going for a while, I guess, but especially in the girls area. And for women's wear, there wasn't a lot of girls designing for girls. There was a lot of men doing graphics for girls, but I guess that was my first niche, was designing T-shirt graphics for girls. So then that kind of led to work, you know, quite a bit of work in Australia. And then I started, I went overseas. I went to America actually, and it was a big kind of around the world trip, one of my first ones, with my partner at the time. And he was in the skateboard industry. And we ended up going to, literally the night before, I was like, I should take some work with me, because nobody, I didn't have a website then, or as I said, no social media or anything. So I put together these little packages. Like, I was at like Officeworks, which I guess is like Staples, like the night before, just printing out these little color printer thick things. And I put together these little packs on the plane of my work, these little envelopes that just had these little, I don't know, it was like a little kit kind of thing of my work. And I was like, oh, I'll just hand them out to people, you know. And then we went to this trade show in San Diego called ASR, which was a big skateboarding kind of trade show. And we knew lots of people there. It was really fun. And then I met these girls there who ran a skateboard company called Rookie. And that was an all-girls kind of skate company. And we had a mutual friend or something. And then so I gave them the package, and then I ended up designing skateboards for them. And later that trip, we went to New York, and I ended up staying with them in New York. And then because I started doing graphics for them, a company in Japan saw my work, and then I started working for Japan, this company in Japan called Irony, and I got some like good press in this magazine called Relax. And I don't know, it just kind of started to snowball a little bit, but like it's not a snowball because it's like over 5 years. So I guess similar thing to what happened in Australia started to happen overseas. And then I ended up like working for Burton Snowboards and like a whole lot of different companies. I worked a lot for a label called Built by Wendy, which was in New York. A lot of different opportunities. And then I just ended up being a lot of, and then I started my clothing label, Princess Tina, at a similar time. So then because I had all these contacts in America and Japan, I was able to sell my label in America and Japan. And, you know, at that time, I would say at least 50% of my work was based in the US. I had a lot of US-based work. And because it was like fashion, and then I started to do like illustration and textile design, and you know, I just kept getting asked to do different things. So, yeah, it just kind of snowballed. And I guess the first 10 years of my career was fashion-based, because I was doing a lot of fashion-based. And then because then I had my kids, and I guess all my inspiration from fashion came from being out and seeing what my friends were wearing and going to clubs and travel and all that thing. It didn't come from like runway shows. I guess it was quite like, you know, streetwear is that's where the inspiration comes from, is the street, mm-hmm. I guess. So because I had my kids and I wasn't out or traveling and stuff as much, then I guess I made quite a conscious flip in my work to illustration. And because I was just at home, and I guess all the work that I'd been doing was quite illustrated anyway. And yeah, it was around then, again, it was a conscious decision, but it was just like based on what was happening in my life. So again, it comes back to that, like that life work thing, where it was all kind of reflective of what was going on for me at that time personally. So, and then it was actually, it was around then I became involved with Jackie Winter, who's my agent here and in America too, actually. They've got offices in the US. So, and I guess, and that came about in a really weird way, where I was approached by another agent. Her name was Rebecca Wolkenstein. I'd never thought of having an agent before. At that stage, Raf, my partner, he didn't run his hospitality business. He ran my business. So we ran the business together for a while. So he was like my agent, I guess. And it was around that time that he started his business. And then Rebecca approached me and she said, do you want to be part of an agency? And I was like, well, I guess so. I don't know. And she started this agency, and her husband was a photographer, and he was like a really popular, I guess, advertising photographer. So it was just me and her husband and this other creative called Jonathan Zawada, and then a few other photographers, and that was the agency. And I was like, okay, just try it out. And so she started to get me these kind of commercial jobs, and I was like, well, this is wild, you know, like I never knew like you could get this access. I didn't know anything about advertising or doing work within advertising, and you know, so that was the first thing for me where I was like, oh my god, you can make some money illustrating. Like, it was like completely wild. But then she dissolved her agency, and then everyone in her agency became part of Jackie Winter. So that's actually how I became part of Jackie Winter.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you about Jackie Winter and just, what kind of opportunities, sort of like how did things open up for you?
Well,
having representation.
Yeah, I mean, that was in the very early days of, I mean, Jackie Winter's been going for 10 years, I think. So this was, they were just probably like 10 years into it was only the first year into Jeremy starting the agency. So, but I guess, you know, it's so, and I'm still part of Jackie Winter, and they're being such a huge part of my career. And I guess what they do is they just get you access to these commercial clients, which I never knew existed before, you know. So like you can do work for Apple, and you can do work for Sony, and you can do, you know, like and but without that, I don't know if I would have ever had the confidence to negotiate that kind of work, you know. So they're really great, as in it's just really nice when you work as an illustrator, and you would know this too, that you're just so solo and there's no, like, here in Australia particularly, there's no guide to like, this is what you should charge and this is what usage is and this is what you know, we don't get taught that. There's no so it's really amazing to have someone who's in there kind of batting for you, I guess. And they've just been so great for me in that respect alone. And if I ever have, like, I'm like, I don't know what to do, then I'll call them and be like, can you just, you know, Jeremy, who runs Jackie Winter, is such an incredible powerhouse of a person, you know, like he's really amazing. And just such a great mentor. He's just so, he's just really clever, really motivated, always. He's just really amazing. So just even having that person there, and all the producers who work there, you just get to know them so well, and it's like kind of like a family.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah, it's been so great for me.
And I imagine that sort of frees you up to just do the work and not worry about contracts and negotiations and
so true.
The admin and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I still have a lot of my own clients as well, and I guess in one way, it's made me. When you do have your own clients, like, you don't have to put everything through Jackie Winter, but when you do have that work, it does make you understand how to, because I'm not very business minded, unfortunately, but it does give you a good guide on what to do when you do have your own clients, as far as like usage and licensing and stuff like that, you know. So they're just really good, and they're constantly kind of pushing forward with like crazy ideas, and they have the gallery that you can show in and stuff. So yeah, they've been great for me in that way. But you know, you have to put in the work too. Like if you're not, they want to see you producing your own work and moving forward and progressing and stuff. So you have to do the work as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just curious, like, sort of like how you get projects. Like, what would you say, like, most of your projects, like, people are approaching you?
Yes.
Or are they coming through the agency, or do you ever reach out to people you want to work with? Or
what does that look like? I've definitely, so I would say probably about 60% of my work comes through Jackie Winter, and it's, you know, you can have, like, they kind of really encourage you to have meetings with them to be like, what kind of work do you want to do? And then they'll kind of, like, you'll be on their radar for certain types of work, I guess. But a lot of most of the work that comes with them is just clients that have approached them, and they want a short list of illustrators, or they just want you. So sometimes you're still pitching for work. You know, it kind of goes in a few different ways where, yeah, the client will come to them, which I'm sure this is the same with any agency, and be like, oh, we want this style of illustration, and then they'll put forward through illustrators, and then they'll, in the meantime, they email you and just say, we've put you forward. Do you have the time? This is the budget. Are you cool? Or they'll just come to the client or come to Jackie Winter and just say, oh, we just want, you know, Becky Oppen or whatever. But, you know, I still have my own. I found with approaching clients, it's never worked for me. And I think that comes back to things have to happen for me at the right time, and I can't push it in the right direction, in that direction. And I've definitely found, like, you know, I really wanted to do children's books, like, maybe, like, I don't know, like 15 years ago when my kids were just little, but I really wanted to. And so I put this folio together, and I went and saw this like person who was like, you know, a children's book illustrator, and that you pay them to give them advice on this is what you should put in your folio, and these are the publishers you should approach, and da da da. And I did all that, and nothing happened, you know, like it was a total Yeah. But then lo and behold, years later, Penguin approached me and said, we want you to do a book. So for me, it's all about timing and, you know, just putting things out into the universe of what I want to do, and then they'll come back at the appropriate time. And I feel like I've learned that lesson again and again. There's definitely things that I've done with friends or, you know, but I think I kind of wait for opportunities to come to me, or I do personal work based around those opportunities, like moving towards those opportunities. And for me, it always kind of things happen when they're meant to happen and I can't push it. That's just me personally. I know absolutely everybody works in different ways. And for me, like that's just, it has to be really intuitive and things happening at the right time. So yeah, generally now clients come to me or opportunities come to me, but I've been working for a long time. So
I'm sure there's just so much out, like, cause I think of it as like, when you're just starting out, you need to like put your beacon out into the world.
Eventually
people come across them and you would just have so many beacons out in the world.
Yes. And I think I still was really involved in a lot of things early on in my career. Like not just for my jobs, but, you know, I was volunteering at galleries. I was doing a whole lot of things. And I think that to me is like, I guess, yeah, like a beacon, I guess, like you said, like it's connecting with people who are like-minded, who could essentially provide you with opportunities in some way at some point in your life. But I was doing it because I was interested in that opportunity, not because I was seeing it as a work opportunity, you know? So I think more and more that's how things work for me. I try not to think of things as work opportunities. I try and think of things of like, this is something I'm really interested in.
Like following a feeling.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, now I'm doing like all this work with a mindfulness company and that's been so amazing and really.
Is that Meta?
Meta is part of, it's developing, we've been developing a mindfulness program for sort of youth, so 12 to 25, but focusing on teens. And so I feel like that's definitely the direction of my work at the moment. It's a lot of health-based stuff and it's a lot of, you know, which is so reflective of my life. I have two teenagers who I have to manage their mental health, you know, like.
Especially so, right now.
Totally right now. So that's it again, this was an opportunity that came my way, which I really encouraged that opportunity. I didn't just see that started with another job and, you know, because I really encouraged that job and sort of went a bit over the top with that job and established this great connection with those people. It led to more work and that was the right thing for me to do at that time.
Yeah. And the way your work looks and feels right now, has it always sort of been had an optimism and like a playfulness to it? Or is that something that's more recent?
No. It's always, you know, it's always had a similar style. I definitely have like a darker style, which I guess.
Really?
I know everyone's like, that's such rubbish. I'm so curious. But I guess for a while I was, you know, really much based on sort of silhouettes and sort of darker colors and very much this black and white kind of scenario. But it still had a sense of playfulness and, optimism, I guess.
I can kind of see, because I feel like I have this with my work too, where people are like, it's so bright and colorful and fun. And I'm like, actually, it's so dark.
I know.
Like, it's so deep. But people don't see that. No. They see like the playfulness of it.
Exactly. And it's that same thing with like cute. Like, I'm so obsessed with cute, but there's such a dark side to cute, you know? And it's the same thing, you know, I really love Japan and Japanese culture, and that's a huge part of theirs. This kind of darker side of cute. And I feel like, I always say, there's a darker side to my work. But now I think recently I've definitely been embracing just the fun, optimistic part of it. And that seems to be working pretty well. But I think it, you know, I hope it has not a deeper meaning in it, you know, but it definitely, you know, a bit more thought provoking perhaps, especially the more sort of messaging work that I've been doing lately, which I hope, which seems to help people. I don't know, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, it helps me so much. Like, if I'm if I'm scrolling Instagram and I'm, like, having sort of, like, a
average day.
And I see your work, I just smile.
Well, that's nice. There's lots of people who are doing that now. There's so many great accounts on Instagram which are purely sort of we'll have really good quotes, we'll have really good, you know.
Yeah.
And it's good. I like the way that Instagram can be used for that positive, you know, positive nature. It can really, you know, like you said, that one kind of tile can really change your day sometimes, which is great.
Yeah. And do you feel like there is a message in your work, or like maybe like a mood that you're striving for?
I mean, yeah, I definitely like being helpful. And I think, you know, a lot of people, I post a lot of things on my stories, which is like, you know, today, from today in Melbourne, like masks are mandatory from today. It's the first place in Australia that it's happened and stuff. So I, for the last week, I've been posting like people being freaking out about where to get masks. And so I've been posting like, here's this person who's making masks, or here's that person who's making masks. And when, you know, the Black Lives Matter kind of thing was happening here as well, I was, you know, I've made a whole like anti-racism resources and put it in my highlights. And you know, I just kind of, I really feel like it can be such an evil platform, but it can also be really, really useful. And people always are, thanks so much for putting this information up. I'm like, don't thank me, I didn't make the information. I'm just putting it out there so everyone can kind of use it. So yeah, I think it can be really useful, but it can be really evil too. Sorry, is that completely off track? Did I just lose?
No, that's, I totally agree with you. I feel like it's a neutral and it could really go either way.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that you're, yeah, you know, putting positivity out.
Positivity, yeah. Yeah, that's yeah, the aim of the game. Yeah.
And maybe like, going back to sort of like you, yes, saying that there's this like maybe darkness to your work. It's, yes, like, because I feel like in comedy, like comedians are so funny, but they're maybe funny because of how things truly are. Like there's, yes, just like,
it's
something,
an honesty
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely always try to have it down to earth in everything that I do. I just try and make it to be really down to earth. And yeah, honesty. I definitely have got in trouble. Well, not in trouble, but some not very appreciative messages for putting some of the memes that I've put up. Like some people like, that this is so not right, and da da da. I'm like, oh my god, well that's, it is dark humor. That's how you cope with it. That's how I cope with everything, is with that, right, dark sense of humor. But I think it's, you, like you said, it's actually just truthful, or it's honesty, you know, it's not pretending everything is fine.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I mean, are there like any sort of ideas that you're exploring right now? Like what's sort of at the forefront of what you're thinking about? And
I don't know.
It's such a deep question.
It is. I guess, you know, this is so funny. Raph and I have been watching, I don't know if you watched that series Alone. It was like,
no.
It was like from like 5 or 6 years ago. And it was like about like getting dropped in the wilderness. And it's, how long can you survive in the wilderness by yourself, kind of thing. I know. So we're watching that because I'm like, oh, we feel like we're alone at the moment, but this is what it's like to be really alone. And so Raph is like, so there's 10 competitors and the one person who lasts a long time. And this guy lasted for 3 months by himself, just like, and you're allowed to take 10 tools and that's it. And you have to like find your own food and stuff. It's hardcore.
That's insane.
Yeah, I know. Wow. It was so ridiculous. But Raph, because my husband's like, I'd do that. And I'm like, oh my god, first of all, you cannot barely even camp, like let alone like survive. You're not a survivalist. But he's like, oh, you imagine how much personal growth that you'd go through. Mm. So yeah, I definitely feel like that made me think about the current situation we're in now, is like the personal growth that you can go through, like finding out things about yourself. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about right now. And also, yeah, what to constantly cook for my children, who are both home all the time and are hungry all the time.
Yeah, teenage boys.
Oh, my god. Goodness. Yeah. That I'm thinking about. What else am I thinking about? I guess the future. Like it definitely makes you, I don't know if you felt like this, like we live in like not a huge house, but it's, you know, a big enough house and we have a yard and stuff, you know, and we've got a giant park across the road that we can go to. So I guess I'm thinking about that, it does, being in this situation, you're like, oh, if I was in the country right now, this would just feel so much better. So it kind of always wanted to be in the city. I'm such a city person. But now I'm like, well, maybe the city, you know, you can see that, I guess I'm kind of assessing my whole living situation. Mm-hmm. Not that I will move to the country.
We don't have a yard. So
right. Oh, my god, I'm jealous of people. So hard. Yeah. but you know, Australia in general has a lot of space. Everyone has a lot of space here. So I feel like I'm like, I don't know, it's just making me think about things like that. And, you know, I definitely, of course, whenever I think about stuff like that, I want to make a series of work on it. But do, where do I actually make a series of work? I usually do a few sketches in my sketchbook and then it's, then it doesn't actually make it, but maybe it'll come up another time. But yeah, that's kind of, they're the main things that are going through my head at the moment. Trying to
work out
how to work. No, that's all right. Yeah, write a million lists and get nothing done. Yeah.
That just triggered something I wanted to ask you, because I was listening to the interview you did with the Design Files, like podcast episode.
Yeah.
I love that interview. Yeah. And you mentioned in it, like, you could either be generous with ideas or you can hold on to them. And that, like, I thought that was such an interesting.
Yeah. That's something I definitely learned along the way, is that, like, I gave this example in that interview where it's like, you know, you have this idea. I had an idea and it was for a t-shirt graphic or something. This was like early in my career. And then I didn't give that idea to that person, to that client, because I was like, oh, this is too good. Like, I want to hold on to that. But then I never ended up using that idea. And then that great idea just doesn't see the light of day. And, you know, there was also in the fashion industry, there's a lot of, I guess, secrecy about, you know, who makes your stuff or who makes your patterns. And if you've got a really good pattern maker, sometimes you don't want to share that with anyone. And, you know, that always just never resonated with me and made me feel really uncomfortable. And I think I've learned that I just need to share ideas more than anything, you know. I think it's so much more value to share your ideas and your contacts, and someone's going to take that idea and that contact and they're going to do something completely different with it to what you would do with it. So it's so much more beneficial, and it makes you feel so much better to actually share the ideas rather than not.
Yeah. And I think of it, like, what came up for me when you mentioned that in the interview was just like this river of ideas. And if you're holding on to the ideas, yeah, it's just the water sort of stagnant.
Totally. And, yeah. It just perpetuates, again, more and more ideas. So yeah.
Yeah, like you can keep exploring more ideas once you just let it go.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's far better to share. And so that's why, you know, I do a lot of talks and I'd say yes to a lot of opportunities. You know, I don't necessarily like public speaking, but I think it's really important to share what I do. And the fact that someone wants to actually hear it is like such an honor. Like, I feel so flattered that someone might want to hear what I have to say. So you might as well, put it out there.
Yeah. And I think you sometimes like underestimate your superpower or underestimate. Like,
absolutely. People love to hear your stories and your truths. And my truths are pretty, they're not that like amazing. You know, I live a pretty simple life. And some, you know, when you were saying like, how do you achieve so much? I'm like, there's no tricks, you know, you just need to like, yeah, just hard work.
So Becky, yeah, I feel like I could talk to you for a really long time, but yeah, I want to be respectful of your time. And I just have a couple more questions for you.
Yeah, so, yeah, cool.
Is there any advice you would, you know, give your past self when you were sort of at the beginning of your career?
Definitely is. I always say this is like, don't compare yourself to others. Like, you're running your own race, and that race kind of will do what will do what's beneficial for you. And so you can waste a lot of energy being comparing yourself to your peers or to, you know, just other people, and that energy is wasted, because you could put that energy into your own career instead of, you know, worrying about somebody else's career. So that would be something. And I think I learned that pretty early on, but sometimes you still find yourself sort of being jealous of people or, you know, somebody's achievements, or they got that job and you didn't. And you know, so I guess it's a form of rejection as well. And it's quite a lot of work to get past that. But, you know, it's really important to be able to deal with that, not compare yourself and to be able to deal with, I guess, jealousy and rejection.
Feel that.
Yeah.
Feel that envy.
Yeah. And the quicker you can learn how to, and it's fine to let yourself feel those emotions, but I guess kind of observe them and then move on, you know? Mm. So the faster that you can kind of get past those things, the better that it is for everything, I think. And, you know, let it motivate you, and let the success of your peers motivate you rather than, you know.
That's great advice.
Yeah, rather than make you bitter, I guess, you know, yeah. Or envious.
Especially
or
in the age of Instagram.
Oh, my God. You know, and Instagram's so – and I'm so – grateful that I did start my career before Instagram, before social media. You know, I can, yeah, I feel really grateful that that didn't happen. Instagram can show such the reality it wants to show. You know, you can really show the reality you want to show on there. I think that's definitely can be really hard.
Yeah, yeah, it's everyone's highlight reel, I guess.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, and I have a couple questions from people who wrote into me. And,
oh, really? That's wild.
Yeah, yeah. So this will be helpful to people who are sort of starting their career.
Mm.
So the first one is, how do you know that you're on the right path with your work?
I don't know. I feel like I have really good intuition and, you know, if you're continuously succeeding and, you know, it's funny because Raf and I have had, my husband have had lots of discussions about that, and we have two different viewpoints. And his viewpoint is that, like, if you keep doing something, at some stage you're going to be good at it, you know, like if you're persistent, then at some stage you're going to be good at that thing. But for me, it's more like about intuition and, you know, like definitely I've had some better success in some jobs than I have in others, you know. So it's like paying attention to those successes and being like, okay, well, this is obviously something that I'm good at, that I can, you know, I'm really good at doing stuff for kids. I'm really good at doing stuff that's positive and, you know, bold and colorful. So I'm not going to try and go in a direction that doesn't, you know, that doesn't support those, that doesn't need that kind of, I'm not going to try and do a goth kind of, you know, dark kind of job. I'm not going to go for that. So I guess for me, it's like looking at the things I'm successful in and kind of continuing on those, on that path. And there's definitely been times when I've been like, well, this is not the right path for me, you know? So I guess for me, it's looking at what people respond to and what's successful and what makes me feel good.
Yeah,
but it's hard,
and having that intuition to know that it's, you know, maybe not in you, but it's just not the right path for you. And
exactly, there's so many things that I love. There's so many really dark and really adult, you know, work that I love, but I know that's just, I just have to be an observer of that. Like, that's not the direction for my work right now. It doesn't really, you know. So yeah, intuition and awareness, I would say, is the two things that really important for me to knowing I'm on the right path, for sure.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like developing that intuition is so crucial.
Really, really
navigating
important.
The career.
And
then the next one is like, how do you grow your account? So I imagine this is the Instagram account. Like, how do you, I know you have a really large following. Like, how did you grow? Was it just sort of organic?
Yes, it was totally organic. And I had no, like, it was never, I've been on Instagram for ages now, you know. So that's definitely part of why I have a large following, because I've been on there for so long. And I don't post things to get likes, or I don't post things to, so I use it in a really, like, everything in an organic way. I'm not like, it is funny though now, because the way that it's grown, you do, I think a lot more about what I post than what I used to. Like, is this main feed worthy? Is this main, you know, like. So, yeah, I don't know. For me, it's just been just absolutely focusing on what I like and my work, and just being quite honest and open. And that seems to have worked for me. And I always try to not present an Instagram version of myself, like just present, it's just me. Like, it's not, there's no other version, you know. There's definitely a lot of things that I don't put on there, just, you know, for my family's privacy and, you know, a whole lot of stuff, but I don't, there's nothing on there that's not, that you won't find in real life. Yeah. So that, yeah, that's what's worked for me. I don't curate it. Like, especially my stories now, I don't curate it. It's very like spur of the moment. It's, I like Instagram to be used what it, you know, it's instant, like that's how it should be used. And not necessarily main feed anymore, it's not like that, but definitely stories.
Yeah, I think like people can kind of like see themselves in what you're posting to, and I think
I hope so.
People connect. Yeah,
I hope so. But yeah, I don't know if that's any that's helpful. But yeah, it's funny, Instagram, because I've been on it for so long and it's changed so much in that time, like so much. If I go back and look at my photos that I put used to put up, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, well, first of all, my children would never let me post a photo of them anymore. They used to post good photos of them, but you know, your recent Felix update was very cute too. But
oh,
he's so chubby.
He's it's such a wonderful age. Like,
yeah, he's so chubby. Cute.
Yep. Want to squeeze him all day.
Yeah, well, you can. So. It's good.
Yeah, I'm so lucky. But this was wonderful. I'm so glad I got to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your generosity and taking the time for me.
Yeah, of course.
Hey there. Thanks so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Becky as much as I did. To find out more about Becky, you can follow her on Instagram at Becky Orpin or on BeckyOrpin.com. To stay up to date on all things The Friendly Unknown, follow me on Instagram at Allison Felice or visit TheFriendlyUnknown.com. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Hang tight until then and take good care of yourselves.